Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Breakthrough Directions. Each week, Breakthrough Directions explores the two faces of your business, outward through marketing and client delivery, and inward, your vision, profit model, systems, team, and you, so you can grow a business you love and live the life of your dreams. Welcome to the show.
Well, welcome everyone to another episode of Breakthrough Directions here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Gina Gaudio-Graves, the Dean and Founder of Directions University at directionsuniversity.com. I'm calling in live this week from Bonita Springs, Florida, as I do each week on Tuesdays at noon Eastern. And we have got yet another great show lined up for you guys today. We have my co-host, the founder of the Breakthrough Academy at breakthroughbydesign.com, Linda Feinholz. And Linda's calling in from Los Angeles. Hello, Linda.
Hello, Gina. I'm calling in from scorching Los Angeles, where we're all trying to figure out where we can hide in air conditioning or underwater. So I'm delighted to come up above water, out of the pool, in order to bring an amazing woman to our audience today. I've been so looking forward to this. Karen Sargent helps small businesses unpack what they already know about customers in order to make really great digital products like membership programs, masterminds, and even their flagship courses. And while she's a project manager by temperament, and she's done projects everywhere from Silicon Valley to Afghanistan, which we're going to hear about, she really enjoys working from her armchair. So we can all relate to that. And I'm so looking forward, Karen, to having you join us on today's show. Welcome.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm dealing with the heat just south of you in North County, San Diego. And we don't have air conditioning so close to the beach. So I have about 10 fans on me right now.
You're right. I think what we need to do is do what our friend Ken Krell does, which is get ourselves up to our shoulders in a swimming pool or in the ocean and just put our phones above water from there. Gina, you can be floating in your pool holding your phone up in the air. You know. Oh, my goodness. Well,
sounds like a great idea to me because it's still really hot over here. And
yep.
The Midwest and the central parts of the country are freezing already. Makes no sense.
I know. It's absolutely strange. But it keeps the energy moving. So, Karen, I know that as soon as people hear the word Afghanistan, everybody's ears perks up and say, what? How? So I would love it if you would share with our audience your trail of how you came to be doing what you're doing now.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, so you're right. Especially outside of the D.C. core area where it's so regular, you know, where the fact that people are jetting off to those places in the world is sort of like ho-hum back where I used to live. But out here, yeah, and around the world, I think that is sort of an intriguing thing. So I used to work, I worked for 10 years for U.S. intelligence, which means, yes, what you think it is. I worked at the Counterterrorism Center inside the CIA for most of the, well, the entirety of the Afghan War. And then I left in about 2009 to come near the ocean where it's cool and breezy and temperate all the time, except for today.
So, okay, I know that because it was CIA and because it was counterterrorism, there's a whole bunch that we can't ask, but how did you come to be doing that kind of work?
This was kind of a first love of mine. I went to school in international relations and then went to grad school in, again, international relations, but with an emphasis on counterterrorism. And there was a long and winding road from academia into, 2001 when I joined the CTC, but those topics just sort of grab at you and are just truly interesting, and you kind of can't really explain why it is that it intrigues you, but it always did. Now, I grew up in academia. I grew up with the red terrorist, you know, the communist terrorist threat, and of course that changed radically by the 2000s. and so it was a totally different, you know, the raw kind of talent of unpacking what was going on was something I learned in school, and then I just applied it on the job.
And it's really fascinating. You know, I've had conversations with so many people over the years about if they went to college, what did they focus on in that setting. And so much of what isn't really talked about is whether, like Gina, you went to law school and got a law degree, or like myself where I went through an MBA program. So much of academia is teaching us how to gather information, how to interpret information, and how to make decisions about what to do with information.
I totally agree. I totally agree. It teaches us how to think and think critically and how to, you know, amass an argument, and I mean that in the kind of in the academic sense, and find where the holes are and find where the weakest links are, and to go, you know, shore those up with either data or changing the idea a little bit. It absolutely, you know, liberal arts, I think kind of get poo-pooed these days because it doesn't train you for anything. I think it trains you for everything.
It's fascinating. And so did you have a long-term plan to be working in intelligence, to be working in that use of critical thinking, or was it just a happenstance opportunity that came across your radar screen?
Well, when I was finishing up sort of in the late 90s, I got out of Silicon Valley before the dot-com bust, but I was there for the boom, and it was, a great ride, but it wasn't what I wanted to do. You know, I had sort of taken that job out of college and enjoyed myself and learned a ton, but I needed to go scratch this itch of working, you know, for the government. I kind of had, you know, saving the world, you know, in my, you know, that sort of romantic notion of making the world safe. And so I was hired into DTC in March of 2001, and I was still sort of in the kind of basic training on September 11th. And
yeah.
I was on the Bin Laden group on September. I was already on it. So we just, I feel like on September 11th, we just stepped on the gas pedal and a decade passed. You know, you have more work than you could ever do. And I actually had 6 months on the account, which was more than anyone else was when we started plussing up our ranks and bringing everybody in. And so soon I was jumping on planes and spending quite a bit of time in Afghanistan and Pakistan and the other stands. And, I think I wanted to, stay. The problems are intriguing enough, and the quality of the people, and the it was so thrilling. But it took a toll on everything, on my health, on my social relationships. You know, when you jump on a plane and go 12 time zones a pop, and you're there for 90 days, and you're not calling home. There's no email. There's no nothing. It really isn't much of a life. And so at the end of 2009, I was just saying, oh, I have to go see about me now. So I quit my job and sold my house and moved to the ocean.
And it's interesting because I suspect that part of what made the work really intriguing was both the intellectual challenge, but also the relationships of being with a really amazing team of really focused and equally driven and equally smart people on that team you were working with.
Precisely. Just, you know, when you're doing what you love to do with other smart people and you have the most important problem set to be tackling, like, what could be better? What could be better? This was national security, and we were doing some pretty important stuff, not to be all tantalizing or anything, but we were doing stuff that was keeping people safe.
Yeah.
And it was very hard, and it took big brains and a lot of sweat equity to make it come to pass. And so now it's funny, when I manage projects for people, some of their comments are like, well, you know, I always say there's no crying in launching, because when we're launching an ebook, you know, no one's blowing, you know, no one's shooting at me, no one's blowing up a bomb, you know, no one's going to die if this doesn't happen. And because I've been there where the stakes were much, much higher and things were much more dicier. So I kind of have that perspective now where,
It puts everything in context, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So you came out to the western, non-humid, temperate coast.
Yeah. Oh, and the irony of that sentence right this morning.
Exactly. With all of these project management skills, and then how did you decide what to do with that skill set?
Well, I had I have sort of two kind of side hustles, side businesses that I run. And the first one was taking the training that I was doing at the very tail end of my government experience, which was prepping people to go out to hostile environments and to be safe there, which means interacting, if you get rolled up by the security apparatus, how to kind of successfully navigate an interrogation. Or if you're abducted by a criminal group or a terrorist group, how to navigate that experience and try to stay alive. So I had been doing that for government-type customers, and I wanted to bring that into sort of the civilian sphere and teach it to missionaries who go out to, you know, some hotspots overseas, and to medical humanitarians who also go into those places and can tend to get in trouble as well. So I was very experienced with the curriculum and the best practices, but I thought they were taught so terribly. I mean, I just want to say that word. It was just like a crime against humanity that we were, you know, spilling all of these words at people, and this was training that was going to keep them alive on the worst day of their life. But it was taught in such a way, it was like reading the dictionary to somebody. And I wanted that to be better. And so I actually opened books and wrote bloggers and, you know, people who were into, like, creating great curriculum and great presentations and things like that. And it was a massive self-education piece so that I could put together some curriculum that I was proud of and that I thought would really hit the mark. Once I did that with the government, so the government kind of course training experience, and then in my own side business, I was like, wow, you know what? I really like the idea of taking ideas that really made themselves into a decent course and make them into a decent course. So I started selling that service to entrepreneurs who were sort of in the same boat. They're sitting on top of a lot of knowledge and expertise, but they're not quite able to translate that into a really great learning experience for their customers, and so I can sort of step in and bridge that gap for them.
And so now you really help people get their ideas out of their heads and into the hands of their customers.
Yeah, you're reading my website. That's that's a lot.
But I love it.
Website.
It paints the whole picture from concept through implementation. And I suspect, you know, most people who are experts are either expert because they have a passion for the thing they have an expertise in, or they're so degreed in it that they're an expert, or they've worked at it for 10, 20, or 30 years, so they're an expert at it. But that doesn't mean that they know how to take that knowledge, that understanding, and that experience and translate it in a fashion that the next person can learn from.
Exactly. And I would add to those people, those high performers and those experts, they also come with high expectations for a course because they're so good at their one-on-one or small group type business that, you know, in their heads, they want to translate. There's like some magic going on as they sit and do their one-on-one practice, and they expect that same uniqueness and that same sort of magic to be in a group course, and they sort of stare at that blank piece of paper, and it just sounds so ho-hum when they get it down on paper. They know that something's not right, but they're not quite sure how to, you know, what to really do to make it better. And those are sort of where they are when they come to me, which is, I've been staring at this for quite a while now, and I'm no dummy, but how in the world do I make this something that I'm very proud of?
And now I'm curious, when most of them are coming to you, are they coming to you thinking that they're going to somehow get it from their spoken word expertise into written word and somehow that is going to go have a life of its own in the world? Or what are they envisioning doing when they start thinking about how to turn this into what we would call information marketing?
Right. I think there's two steps, and it depends. Sometimes they're aware of this sort of middle step, and sometimes they're not. There is that step of trying to systematize what they're doing in real life. So there's a lot of there's a fair number of experts out there who just can sit down with another person and provide their coaching or provide their consultation, and they're not, you know, they provide such a good product, but they're not really aware of that they're actually going through the same five steps each time. Like, they're not aware of their own methodology. And so sometimes step number one is to look at the service that they provide, and I can look at it and say, oh, well, I see, you know, step one, two, three, four right off the bat. And they're like, you're right, that is what I do. And so once we have crystallized their methodology, that's what we need to teach. And so then, and then we can sort of turn that into actual, you know, appropriate curriculum.
Very cool. So what's the range of some of the folks who you've been working with? What's the range of them, their expertise, their the content that they're trying to turn into these programs?
Well, everything from, I have a, they're mostly solopreneurs, although I do have, there's sort of a big leap. There's sometimes they're solopreneurs and sometimes they're corporate clients. I don't have too much of the in-between, but the solopreneurs are usually trying to put together their first course, or I've had a couple come that are old hats that produce, and it's really the info product portion of the mastermind. They wanted like a 6-month curriculum that really hung together well, and that they were graduating students at the end of that 6 months knowing something more, not just experiencing, you know, some, you know, the closeness of a mastermind group, but actually having being served in education so that at the end of 6 months they were actually performing better. And so she had some, that was an interesting case. She had some really lofty goals, and the exercise with her was kind of getting her down from the rafters and actually talking about what do they need to know in order to perform better. And she knew it all. It's all in her head. It was all there. It was just a matter of, you know, kind of cracking open her skull and getting it out. And so there's a series of exercises that I walk people through that help them dig it in. You read the tagline at the very beginning. It's help you unpack what you already know about your customers. Very rarely do these entrepreneurs need to go back out and do some research. They know. They just haven't organized it in their heads in a way that would produce curriculum well.
And there's a really important element in there, because so often I find when I'm talking with people who are experts that they're information experts, data experts, explanation experts, but that's not the same thing as actually knowing their customer. And that, to me, was a pretty unique element that you were pointing out, which is you're not just trying to become a fountain just sort of pouring information out of the end of a spigot. It's taking into consideration who is your customer and what stage are they at, what level of awareness do they have, and how do you get them up stages of awareness until they themselves really master and understand the information that you're transferring to them.
Exactly. And I think, you know, just as segmenting the clients that I've worked with, entrepreneurs, the tiny businesses actually are better at it than the corporate clients. The corporate clients are, you know, serve up information by the metric ton. They think more is better, and they think that training is really just a theory, like a Wikipedia article, just sort of written, like that to know more would be, like their goal is to know more about. I actually was auditing a course for a corporate client over the weekend. That's what I do on the weekends. Every learning objective was become familiar with our product line, become familiar with the pros and cons. I was thinking, what a weird, you know, learning objective. Like, what about matching incoming potential clients with the right product? That would be a business objective, but not become familiar with. Why? You know. You know, it's that second step that I think the corporate clients are generally worse at. I think the solopreneurs at least instinctively know that there's a performance element there, maybe because solopreneurs are heavy consumers. of each other's training, and they kind of instinctively know when something is a dud and when something isn't. It's like that they themselves as customers. So they're a little bit more savvy, but it doesn't mean that they themselves know how to do it with their material.
You know, it's interesting. I am reminded of a conversation with Gary Vaynerchuk where someone stood up in the audience and said, you know, how do you figure out the return on investment? I want to, you know, do search engine optimization for a mega corporation. And Gary just said outright that, you know, there isn't one formula for it. There is the action steps you have to take in order to be in relationship with your market, to be able to see what is happening before you do the SEO and what's happening after you do the SEO. And in many ways, it's the same challenge, whether it's the solopreneur or the corporation. It's get out of your habits of how you're approaching it to be in relationship with your customer.
That's a great way. I'm stealing that. Gary, I'm stealing it.
That's wonderful.
I think that is the element that people are searching for, which is you know, there's a difference, and not just word wise and not just like in a simple semantic way, training and a great customer experience. You know, the customer experience, you know, not just from adult learning, you know, all those ways that adults like to learn and retain information, but they also want to provide that sort of something else, that they want to be in relationship with their clients, and they want their clients to experience something at least fun or enjoyable or whatever word, you know, that works with their brand versus just, you know, shipping them information. So I do think that the smaller companies are more engaged in that. I think the bigger, well, there's way more steps between, for instance, a training, someone who is creating training curriculum in a corporation and the end user. And, you know, there's a bazillion, you know, they might not have ever met. They may have never talked. And not the case, obviously, with our solopreneurs, because we talk to our customers all the time.
So what's your advice for companies, both big and small, on how to do that?
Well, I think you need to go deep into the customer experience of the problem that you're trying to solve. So there's a Seth Godinism that I love to trot out right around now, and he says aggressively define the problem. And the way you aggressively define the customer problem is to look at it again and kind of sink into it, because the barriers to performance sometimes are not obvious, and they're almost never solved with more information. It is almost never a knowledge problem, is what I'm saying. Knowledge is the necessary but not sufficient step, but there's something else out there that you need to discover about the customer in order to get this boost in performance. So for an example, think about stopping smoking. That's not a knowledge problem, right? If we educated people on the dangers of smoking, they'd stop smoking, right? We all know that it's not that easy.
I light another cigarette.
And wearing sunscreen. Everyone knows that they're supposed to wear sunscreen. You know, so there's a barrier to performance out there that is not solved by knowledge. It's solved by something else. And there is an equivalent problem set for your problem, even if it's a Facebook ad. If you're trying to teach people how to, you know, do Facebook ads or try to do, you know, sign language for babies or the like, there is a reason why your customers aren't performing at the new level right now. Go find out what that is. Have your training solve that problem, and you're going to set yourself apart in the marketplace right there.
That's a great way to say it. In my experience, one of the things I teach because of the things I've seen is usually the issue is the customer doesn't understand the why at a deep enough level to be interested in the how-to stuff you might be offering. So if you can transition out of selling how-to stuff and instead selling stuff that really hits the why hard, it makes it a lot easier to get them in and get them to really consume and act upon the information that you're sharing. Do you see the same thing?
Absolutely.
And I find it so rare for companies to teach the why in the first place. In fact, in my company, Directions University, we almost never teach people how-to stuff. We're not going to teach them how to set up their WordPress website. What we're going to teach them is the why behind it at a very, very deep level, the why behind every part of it. And once we do that, the stuff that they thought they were stuck on kind of vanishes. It's really interesting.
Oh, I like that. Yes, I think that is very, I've seen that happen with my clients, and I've seen that happen with myself. So often, and actually in the training that I provided, to the missionaries and the medical humanitarians, we were trying to ship them something so complicated and so hard to remember, and when we actually sort of threw all that off the table and re-looked at the problem, it ended up being so elegantly simple, like Apple simple. I love, the way Apple talks about design is when they sink into customer and user experience problems like nobody else. They are the experts. And then they create these beautifully, elegantly simple products with, like, their remote has two buttons and a click wheel, whereas my remote has 350 of them, all well organized. It's a well organized remote. It's obviously comprehensive, but it's certainly not elegant, and it's certainly not, they didn't try to problem solve. But when you look at the Apple remote, it's a beautiful piece of metal, and it's very elegant, and they problem solve.
Absolutely.
And that's the difference. That's sort of the difference between DIYing it or. Well, not really DIYing it, I don't want to say that, but, just sort of a well-organized course versus something that elegantly solves a problem that the customer had really even defined in her head that she had, but she hasn't.
One of my friends and a faculty member at Directions University, it's actually the guy that introduced me to Linda, is hosting a workshop, a virtual workshop on the 25th and 26th of September on content for course creators. How do you create courses? How do people learn? How does that affect what you do with courses? I've got to get you in touch with him because he's still lining up the faculty for that workshop. You've got to be on that course.
Well, it sounds like fun. It sounds like something way up, right up my alley.
I will get you in touch with him when we're done with the show today. On your blog, I'm going to change the subject for a minute. On your blog, I notice a number of articles about doing things using Evernote. How does Evernote come into this world?
Oh, beware. Beware when you get me talking about Evernote. It's like one of my favorite nerd things ever. Evernote, we'll talk about elegantly problem solving. I feel like Evernote is one of the best designed software solutions out there, for things you didn't even realize were a problem. So Evernote is my favorite little device to do, so many things. Basically, I've subcontracted my memory retention out to Evernote. It just sort of handles all of that for me. And it just has a retrieval. It has a retrieval function that is it's a sort of state of the art. So it searches inside PDFs and inside attachments and things like that. So all you really have to do is remember a phrase that appeared somewhere in some document that you want to put your hands on, and pretty much within 20 seconds you have your hands on that document, which is kind of a lifesaver. So I use that as a tool. I use it as the basis for my course incubator product, which is my one-on-one offering with clients who are trying to build a product, to build an info product. So it's the information and our collaboration actually takes place over Evernote. And then I also use it when I'm a project manager for a couple businesses, and I have managed launches for other entrepreneurs, and I almost always manage the launches out of Evernote, kind of a combination of Evernote and Redbooth, which is a task management software.
And how would people use it to actually help them with creating courses?
So there's a couple stages where I think Evernote comes in handy. The first is in the sort of pre course creation phase, where you're really just collecting inspiration and ideas. There's a web clipper that is an extension for any one of the browsers that are out there. And when you come across an article or even an image or anything you like, it's a one-click filing system to shove it into Evernote. And so if you stay curious and you're reading, you know, blogs and articles and encountering things on the internet that pique your interest and make you think and makes, you know, that get the juices flowing, if you save them and then when you're ready, call them sort of up and go through them and just have all of those good, you know, those good thoughts in your brain. It's a way to stay inspired. It's a practical mechanism for keeping the things that inspire you top of mind when you're trying to sit down and create something really terrific. And then when you get to the practical end of, okay, well, let's put it together an outline, and then I need to outline, you know, lesson number one and module number A and all of those things, Evernote is just a great document management system that allows you, first of all, it auto-saves, and it auto-saves in the cloud, so you'll never lose a piece of information again or forget to save it or close out of it, you know, without saving kind of thing. And you're able to, you know, ship it to a friend or ship it to me and ask for my comments and editorial comments on it in a way that just keeps you out of email and keeps, you know, the attachments to email down well. So I even publish on Evernote. So there are a lot of times for one of my clients that I publish like little training snippets that I need to go back and tweak every once in a while. And creating a PDF, which is static, and keeping updating that PDF and keeping updating the link gets to be, you know, kind of like a full-time job in and of itself. But I can just update the note in Evernote, and it automatically pushes it out to, you know, the published link is already automatically updated. And that's just a tremendous time saver right there.
It's huge. You know, it's one of the things when I first saw Evernote, I sort of stopped in my tracks because people who had been to my office saw very efficient lateral file cabinets, and then you'd open them and you'd see row after row of file folders with subject titles on them, because every time I found a really good article about a particular topic that was relevant for the consulting and coaching work I do with my clients, you know, into the files they'd go, and people would say, well, you know, why are you keeping all those? I said, because it's really good and I don't want to have to actually mentally remember it. I just know by topic area I've got really good stuff and I can go straight to it and share it when it's relevant. And then when the internet came along, it was okay. I had people, of course, advise me, well, why don't you scan it all in? I said, you don't understand, that's thousands of pages. I'm not scanning that in. But maybe I'm willing to replace it as I find really good stuff in electronic format and create a brand new filing compendium to then start letting go of those files, you know? And it's the same thing. It's like taking my brain and outsourcing a section of it, because I just can trust the storage, trust how I've organized the information, and when I'm ready for that information, I know exactly how to go access it. So,
well, you're a girl after my own heart. I was nodding along to all of that, not claiming that I haven't just gone through a whole bunch of papers myself trying to purge. I have, you know, all the old college reports as well.
Yeah.
Not yet scanned. But
right.
And actually, you brought to mind another way that Evernote makes things relevant. Like, I sound like a paid consultant here, but like the ShamWow of Evernote. One of the things that it does is, as you're typing or as you're attaching something to a note, it surfaces, you know, through that auto magic process of, you know, however it is they do it on the back end. They surface relevant, additionally, notes that you have somewhere in the rest of your Evernote account there's a way that they can make determinations of what is like what you're currently writing about. So it surfaces old content at the bottom of your note and says, hey, these sound relevant to us. Are they relevant to you? So if you ever did scan in your old draft, you can imagine, and you can imagine how this would work at like a design company or a copywriting company where old drafts, you know, so they create a lot of drafts and only move forward with one, but that's really good work. All the abandoned drafts and the abandoned content is good work. It's just that they haven't brought that forward with the client. But what if that were available as your design team or as your writers were creating additional content and new content sort of surfacing automatically at the bottom and says, hey, you once wrote something similar. Have a look at this. And, you know, it can really, you know, provide inspiration, and it can also cut down on, you know, future work if you're reusing old drafts and just making that older content. You know.
Another way that I can, that is, it's so relevant, this one particular feature is, you know, so many of us are trying to create really engaging blog posts or postings on Google Plus and so on. And one pathway to that is what's trending right now, I'll comment on that. But another is if you've got an area of expertise is to actually have created a compendium of what you've already said about a topic so you can be deliberately building on it. And it serves multiple purposes, like to create a continuous stream of content that you're putting out there in the world through the blog post, through the Google Plus post, and so on. And going back to what we were talking about before, creating a curriculum, it lets you see, if you want to, in an organized fashion, what you've already said about something. So you don't have to feel as if you're looking at that blank white piece of paper again, trying to come up with a totally unique thought, when it actually you've already been really effective at how you've thought about it in the past.
Exactly. Can you imagine going through college with this? How did we manage our term papers without this kind of thing?
It was very simple. I avoided class where I had to write term papers.
Oh, dang it, I didn't take that career path.
So when you look at the most effective way people are training and teaching and doing programs now, are there particular trends that you're seeing that are working best at the moment?
I think one of the more important things that an instructor can be doing is doing periodic and routine assessments of how well the students are mastering the material. And that sounded very highfalutin. It's really just trying to, like, you know, keep your thumb on the pulse of your students. In the solo world, when we talk about group courses, I mean, some of them can have, you know, 50 and upwards people in the course, and how in the world do you effectively stay on top of that and see if they're absorbing what you think they're absorbing, and do they know? Since this isn't academia, this is, you know, a commercial product, you want happy customers, and part of what you need to deliver as an instructor is the realization that they're doing better because of your product. So you don't just want the student to be performing better, although you do. You want that student to attribute the boost to your product. That's how you get a raving, you know, oh, my gosh, I couldn't do this before, but I took, oh, my gosh. And then that's when they go out and they evangelize. So it works both ways. It lets you make sure that you're understanding how they're doing, and it makes them sure that they're understanding how they're doing. And I think one of the ways that the solo world does it really well is by having these Facebook groups or these sort of community groups where, now community groups can go wrong. They're, you know, everyone seems to have a Facebook group attached to their course and nothing really goes on in it. It's sort of just a Q&A or it's just a bunch
right.
of nothing. But when exercises are built into the curriculum to have them come taste something or talk about something in the course, what a great way to manage at a high number of interactions, but to manage it and to have people learn from each other and sort of get that enthusiasm building as well. So I think that I mean, and maybe it's just a sign of the times from the, you know, with the internet and Facebook becoming so popular that we're able to, like, we have the technology to do it. But I do feel like the solos have harnessed that really well. Some of them have harnessed it really well, and to the credit of their course and to the benefit of their students.
And you mentioned a moment ago that communities can the wrong way. I'd love it if you would expand on that a little bit for our listeners.
As an introvert, I almost roll my eyes every time somebody wants to, you know, add me to a Facebook group, because I just, like, wow, who, you know, I don't necessarily want to have a free-for-all discussion with, you know, 350 people I don't know. A lot of times there is unfocused discussion in those forums, and if the instructor doesn't have a heavy presence, or the instructor, you know, it doesn't have to be just the instructor. There could be other gurus that the instructor employs or asks to monitor and provide some expertise in there. But when it's just us chickens talking to each other, we're the clueless ones. We took your course because we didn't know what we were doing. Why in the world would I need to, you know, talk with 50 other people who are in the same boat as me with no instructor direction about what I'm supposed to be learning, and am I mastering it well? To me, that's incredibly frustrating. So I think that's, and I think it's frustrating to even students who don't have the kind of the exhaustion of trying to interact with other people like I do. But I think that's when it's ineffective. That's like having a class discussion where the instructor isn't in the room, and we're all trying to decide whether we learned something or not today. That's not helpful.
And this is such an important point, because so many folks who are taking their expertise and turning it into courses and programs and information products, I often find are trying to figure out how to, in a sense, erase themselves from being in relationship with the people in those courses and have just the material substitute for them. But there's a real danger in doing that, isn't there?
There is. You know, I would almost rather you just nix the Facebook group entirely if you weren't gonna be a part of it. And it's, you know, if you want to have a completely no touch experience, just download this PDF and off you go. Take a survey, maybe. You know, there are a number of topics that lend themselves decently well to that. You know, not everything needs to be this comprehensive, you know, soup to nuts sort of experience. But doing it badly is worse than, you know, not doing it at all.
Yeah, such a good point. So when you're dealing with corporations, is there a different objective that they have when they're seeking to work with you than what a solo has as their objective?
Yeah, so for corporations, there's sort of two ways they come to me. One is because they need internal training. So they're trying to train their own employees, you know, onboarding, new employee training or the like. Or they can be hiring me to provide, to create training for their end, their end customers. And so they tend to, this is not a surprise, what I'm about to say, they tend to be a little more creative when they know that they're going to stick a price tag on it and try to sell it to a customer, and how it needs to, you know, sit with their brand and dovetail nicely. All of that thought goes into that side of training. But employees, you know, it's sort of, can you create that? You know, can you just onboard them and make sure that they have all the pieces of the puzzle? And they don't think necessarily about the full package and the full experience, which is kind of crazy, right? Because your employees are the has, and to onboard them correctly will just pay dividends, you know, huge dividends, ongoing, years and years kind of dividends. So I'd love to see them be a little bit more cognizant of how important that kind of training is. Or maybe maybe they all are, just the ones that come to me are not. Who knows?
Amazing. So, you know, one of the things that's so important is this other part of what you do with the training with 20 Global. And I would love to spend some time talking about that with our listeners, because I think it really gets to the heart of our listeners and what the difference they'd like to make in the world as well. So I'd love it if we could spend some time talking about 20 Global.
Sure. Let's do it.
Wonderful. Well, let's explain it to our listeners.
So 20 Global is a side business that I have with one of my partners that I used to know from the bad old days, and we provide training to missionaries and medical humanitarians who travel to trouble spots overseas, and we teach them how to navigate an interrogation with the police force or the security apparatus that they might have in country. There's a set of best practices that surround that. And then separately, but kind of relatedly, we teach them a set of best practices of how to navigate being abducted by a terrorist group, not a criminal element, not kidnapped for ransom necessarily, but who have a political bent or a religious bent, and you're kind of a pawn. There's some best practices on how to navigate that as well. So we get. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say it's a very mysterious, you know, most of us spend our lives trying to make sure it never happens to us. And there are these two, I'll say, customers for this training where they're choosing to go into situations where there's a real likelihood of having this kind of event happen.
That's very right. Right. So we talk to those people who are being trained. You know, there's a million things that you need to be trained on before you go out. And we are just one element of them. But, yes, they do, you know, they do choose to go into some of the darkest places. You know, I kind of roll my eyes and go, really? You know, because they go in with not too much of a support apparatus around them. And for all intents and purposes, in many of those places, they are breaking the law. So that is precisely why we're there teaching them how to navigate a discussion with a cop when the cop, you know, is angling towards something that, you know, a behavior that he must have, you know, witnessed or somehow got intelligence on, and it could land you, you know, in serious, serious hot water. So we've had clients in fact, the clients who invite us in to teach their cadre do have people who are rolled up in some of the crappier places around the world, and they do know firsthand what it's like to have an untrained person go through that kind of situation. And so it doesn't take much convincing after one to get them at the table, or you know, to call us in and get us around the table and teach, you know, people how to you know, navigate it a little bit better.
Yeah. And so for any of our listeners today for information, might know a relevant organization to pass this along to. The website is 20, spelled out, T-W-E-N-T-Y, then two X's, 20xxglobal.com. So I just think it's really amazing work that you're doing.
Well, thank you. I am impressed with the clients that we come across, and it's such a, you know, it's such a niche thing to know about, right? It's such an oddity to have experience, you know, going into hostile places and actually, you know, I had kind of had the unfortunate, I don't know if it's unfortunate. I guess it's very fortunate. I kind of have to, for full disclosure, when I'm in front of some of the clients, I said, you know, apologies. I actually was, you know, 5 years ago, I was on the other side of the table training them how to effectively interrogate foreigners. We're trying to raise the level of expertise in the security apparatus so that they'll go after the bad guys that we want them to go after too. But as you know, training will lift all boats, right? So some of the more skilled security apparatuses now, you know, can turn those on to, you know, Americans who are abroad, you know, profile stuff. And so it gives us tremendous insight because we have actually been at the table on the other end, and then we're fortunate enough to be able to kind of flip that expertise and teach how to resist it and how to defend against it.
Yeah, fascinating. Especially, you know, it's such an amazing service you're providing to people who are going out, in many instances, trying to provide services. So it's this multi-layered focus on how to be of service. And it's very much the same element with the solopreneurs, I expect. you're helping turn their expertise into curricula. It's how can they serve a wider audience with that information and that learning and that growth for their customers.
Yeah, and to create a lifestyle that that really, really suits, you know, what goes on for them. I mean, I think solopreneurs are some brave, brave people. It's not, I mean, anyone listening who's owned your own business, you're nodding along with me. It's not easy. You have to be an expert in everything. Everything. You know, you're called upon to do excellent work in every facet of running a business. How exhausting is that? So, you know, getting curriculum right is so key to some people's product lines. So this information really can be the difference between a viable business and one that kind of, you know, is, you know, kind of limps along. And it's so great to be out there playing right in that space.
It is, isn't it? In the consulting that I've done for years, it's like somebody said to me, well, you're sort of like a midwife. It's like, well, I feel like it. There's so many stages of business that a business owner or entrepreneur needs to keep stepping up and learning the next level of their competence and skill sets in order to create a sustainable and then scalable business. And it's tremendous fun being a perpetual midwife.
That's a great, yeah, it's a great metaphor. That's exactly what's going on.
And in a sense, that's exactly what you're doing as you're helping them get their know-how from their craniums into transmittable form.
Yeah, that's exactly right, because the ideas aren't mine, but I do midwife them into existence. I like that. Another one I'm stealing. I'm stealing that.
Feel free. I love it. I love it. You know, it's really fascinating looking at this era of how information moves. I was in a fascinating conversation this past week about the Khan Academy where, you know, he started creating online curricula for his nieces and did such a brilliant job of it that that material was getting passed around to others and he was being asked to go subject by subject by subject. Well, you know, he did it for years. He created amazing programs for years that were exactly addressing the needs of his customer, which were, you know, young students trying to really understand new topics. And, you know, then I think it's the Gates Foundation that came along and gave a mega grant to turn this into, how do we turn this into online education delivery worldwide, limitless, and so on. And in a sense, each person who's being that solopreneur who's trying to take their information into a program, a curriculum, a membership program, or whatever, they're doing their own version of it, aren't they?
Yes, I'm a big fan of the Khan Academy, and I do agree that that is what's going on. And what a, you know, he made education cool again, you know, like or instruction cool again, and I think that's almost that alone is something to applaud. But yeah, Khan Academy saved my butt a couple times.
I love it. Like now we're all going to go peek in and see what subjects has he added recently, you know, he and his. and I'm curious about something, you know, when you're dealing with people who are very cerebral, who have a real expertise and they have this dream of transferring that into information that others can absorb, how do you get them to infuse personality? I'll even say humor, engagement into those materials.
Yeah, I think part of that answer is playing to their strengths, understanding what they are and playing to them. You know, there are some people who don't want their face or their voice. You know, they don't want to record. And to sort of find a way that, but you know, they can be witty and, you know, and humorous and full of personality with the written word. And to let them be themselves, because that is also how you let the brand express itself through the course. I mean, there's no Karen Sargent way of creating a course. That would be ridiculous. There needs to be your way of creating your best material. So it's getting the people who want to be on camera and recording if they want to record and letting the writers do the writing and to just kind of use that as a as the cue to slate out what is going to get delivered how. Because when people are in their strengths, whatever it is, when they're in their strengths, that's, you can tell. And they'll, not every brand is, a three-piece band. They don't have to be kind of that lively thing, and their customers might not expect it from them. But they need to be themselves, and they need to express delivering all along. They just need to express it in the curriculum and sort of figuring out what that is and just letting them be themselves is probably the best bet for that.
And you've been pointing out several times throughout this conversation that this really is about them being themselves and being their brand. Do you find that when folks start working with you, they have clarity, can describe for themselves who they are and what their brand is all about, or is it something that comes about?
I would say that it's a mixed bag, but I have sent some prospects to business coaches first, and I said, I think you need to spend some time with her, maybe putting together, you're not quite ready to build a course yet, and when you are, come back. But I think the other end is more, sometimes they're just trying to mimic what's already out there. They're trying to be Marie Forleo part 3000, and create the B-school version of whatever vertical that they're in. And I find that to be more what I'm correcting than anything else, which is no. We can do something different. We can do what let's do something that's going to fit better with your product and your brand.
Yeah, and for folks who are listening to us now live or on replay, the link for Karen's site is in the show notes, as always, but I just want to spell it out so that you understand exactly how her name is spelled. It's Karen Sergeant, and it's KarenSergeant.com. Karen, any last thoughts that you would like to give to people who are sitting here saying, well, I've been listening, and I've got this kind of courage threshold to get up and over in order to take that next step?
A courage threshold. Well, I would say you're sitting on it. I think that I have yet to meet anyone, potential client or client, that hasn't been sitting on a gold mine of information. It's in there. It's in there, and it just needs to come out. So you already are an expert. There is a course that's between your ears, and there's just a few steps that you need to get it out and get it into the hands of your customers.
Well, thank you so much, Karen. This has been a fantastic show. I just emailed you and Ken Krell, so look for that email. Hopefully you guys can connect in the near future and get you into his workshop next week.
Great. Thank you very much.
And thank you so much, Linda.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.
I'm going to go jump in that pool now. Or jump in the ocean.
Same here.
I'm going to the air conditioning. Have a great week, everyone. We'll see you all next week, same time, same place, for another episode of Breakthrough Directions here on Blog Talk Radio.
Join us Tuesday at noon Eastern for the next episode of Breakthrough Directions, from relationship marketing to business success.